We're here at the National Conference for Media Reform in Boston, and Jonathan Simon, you've written an open letter to the media, to every journalist and media reformer assembled here in Boston. It begins like this: how does the big lie flourish and prosper? By being criminal beyond belief, by operating in safety behind a towering, never-happened-here wall of denial, by a foolish assumption of immunity, by being too big a story to be a story within the bounds of journalistic decorum. The gruesome truth is that American media treats election rigging as something that, all evidence notwithstanding, could never happen here. Period. End of story. Move on. Take it from here. Talk about this open letter you've written to journalists gathering here in Boston.
Well, this was an opportunity to address a lot of journalists and a lot of reform-minded journalists and a lot of media reformers about an issue which has just been not only a national disgrace, but is putting our whole country and our democracy in particular in tremendously grave danger, has been going on since the advent and proliferation of vote counting computers, which is pretty much the last decade, and has led to the rampant systemic wholesale manipulation of election results, of vote counts, and the evidence of which has been ignored. If not ignored, then scoffed at by not just the mainstream media, but the progressive media as well.
What are some of the issues you hope journalists will tackle or will learn about?
Well, I mean, the first thing is to accept that there is a possibility that in this country, as in other countries, as in other times in history, there's the possibility for such a disturbing enterprise to be carried on. So the first step is to recognize that, you know, while we acknowledge that election fraud could happen in Kenya and Afghanistan and Iraq and, you know, all these other places around the world, the assumption is this is America, the beacon of democracy, damn it, and therefore it can never happen here. So the first step is to open to the possibility that it might be actually happening here. The second step is to do some research and look into the research that's already been done by experts, Johns Hopkins, Princeton, California Secretary of State's office, the Government Accountability Office, NYU's Brennan Center. All have come to the conclusion, and the firm conclusion, that this voting equipment, not just the touchscreen machines, but also the optical scanners, which are networked and programmable, that they can be manipulated in such a way by insiders or by outside hackers, in such a way that you can change results of multiple elections. A single person can do it and leave essentially no trace other than some anomalous numbers, that this is a vulnerability that would be insane. It would be unacceptable if you were thinking this through from the beginning. Would you hand your vote to a man standing behind, you know, then goes behind a curtain, comes out and tells you the result? And suppose that man were wearing a Palin for President button, a sign of partisanship, and came out and told you, well, lo and behold, Palin won. Would you trust that? That's exactly what we're doing in American elections, because these votes are being counted in secret and they're being counted in cyberspace, and it's under the control of corporate entities and just a handful of corporate entities, which, again, if media was willing to do just a bit of basic research, they'd find out that the pedigree of these corporations and the influential individuals in these corporations is far right, radical right wing, very often Christianist right wing. And these individuals and these entities have every reason to have an agenda. I mean, they're the quintessence of true believers who might believe that, you know, the end justifies the means. So what we're seeing is we're seeing equipment that's incredibly vulnerable to fraud, operators and controllers of that equipment in secret who have every incentive to commit fraud. And then on top of that, we're seeing consistent, cumulative, numerical evidence that the fraud is actually happening. It's all in the same direction. It's always to the right. It's wholesale. It's systematic. And it has been happening since the advent of the computer age of vote counting.
Jonathan Simon, you're saying these words at a time when right now in Wisconsin, there's something very interesting taking place with a judicial election and 7,500 plus votes that just appeared. Can you talk about what's going on there and where does this fit into the overall picture you just painted?
Well, you know, the smell emanating from Wisconsin probably reaches both coasts and the Gulf of Mexico, for that matter. We don't know exactly what happened. We just know that there's a great deal of reason to be skeptical about the sudden emergence, not just of a bunch of votes, but of essentially precisely the number of votes necessary to place what was a critical proxy race for the state Supreme Court, but it really was a proxy about Scott Walker, the governor in Wisconsin, union busting. This was a very critical race. And it was the votes that were found were enough to place that race outside the range for a mandatory recount and therefore potentially dodge a recount if they can convince the now trailing candidate, Joanne Kloppenburg, to concede or convince whoever might want to assay a recount not to do that. So the number of votes is what makes it suspicious. It was just tailor-made to take it past this 0.5% threshold and forestall that recount. Our belief is that with the turnout profile that we saw in that election, Kloppenburg probably should have won by a considerable margin. Again, no exit polls, no audits, no spot checks, no way of knowing what is actually going on in this vote counting process, in these machines, except for the fact that Wisconsin, similar to Massachusetts, where we now are, has still a smattering of hand count communities. And in fact, about 10% of the votes in Wisconsin are counted by hand. And because those are small rural communities, it encompasses close to half the counties in the state. And so there is conceivably a baseline where we can do some analysis and look at how the hand counts compare to the machine counts, how the demographics of those hand count jurisdictions compare to the machine count. We did that in Massachusetts for the Coakley-Brown race, which was another race of huge significance. It took away the Democrats' filibuster-proof majority in the Senate. It put the Tea Party on the map, and it was a harbinger of what then turned out to be a Republican mass sweep in November. It was an enormously important election. Again, counted on optical scanners without any audits, spot checks, exit polls. No actual ballots that went through those scanners were ever examined, and it was a pure 100% faith-based, unadulterated, faith-based election. And Scott Brown apparently won. The only problem is when we did the analysis, we looked at the hand count jurisdictions. About 70,000 votes in Massachusetts were counted by hand. Coakley won where the votes were counted by hand. And we thought about it and we looked at it and we said, well, maybe those jurisdictions were just more Democratic. They weren't. They were more Republican. Maybe those jurisdictions were in Coakley's part of the state. They weren't. They had given Coakley poorer results in her previous statewide race, which was a non-competitive race, not a target for rigging. And she had done better on the op scans than in the hand count. So every way we looked at it, we had a baseline that suggested that these machine counts were manipulated. And quite beyond that, there was absolutely no evidence, there was not a shred of evidence anywhere that they were not manipulated because there were no checks at all. So you, on the one hand, have some evidence that suggests that these results were very questionable, but again, the national assumption and certainly the media assumption was that Brown won, that's it, end of story, move on. And we're seeing something possibly similar in Wisconsin, with the added wrinkle of all these all of a sudden found votes by a Republican operative who once worked for the Republican candidate, who is famous for taking her computer home with the votes stored on it, all these red flags coming together. And we really are looking at it now as an opportunity to do some analysis, to get a recount done. The only problem with doing a recount is that because of the time lapse, chain of custody of the ballots is very, very difficult to maintain. And it's not at all difficult for operatives to get in there and swap out ballots by the thousands, by the tens of thousands, if necessary, to make the recount match the original results. This is why it's very, very difficult to monitor an election. This is why elections need to be counted reliably and publicly, transparently and publicly, on election night. On election night, before the ballots are stored in somebody's garage, before they can be changed. we could hand count the federal and statewide races in this country. There are only three federal races. There are usually three or four statewide races at a time. These could be hand counted. And we did, an econometric study of this. We're looking at 3 to 4 maximum hours per voter lifetime necessary to, as a civic duty, have the citizens of this country count the votes of the other citizens of this country. And I don't know about you, I've already served 11 days of jury duty. So this is a very, very, very modest obligation. If we're not willing to invest that in our democracy, the question has to be asked, do we really deserve to live in a democracy?
Jonathan Simon, you mentioned the stench from Wisconsin going from coast to coast. You also mentioned Massachusetts. Are these anomalies, these election irregularities that might be seen here?
Well, what was egregious about Massachusetts was that there was absolutely nothing. There were no exit polls. There were no baselines other than these hand counts that we, took upon ourselves to do an analysis of. So in a way, it stands out. But they're not anomalies in terms of we have seen from the 2004 election on a consistent redshift, what we call a redshift, where the vote counts are more Republican or more in favor of the candidate that the right wing would support or the ballot proposition that the right wing is supporting. Relative to exit polls, relative to pre-election polls, relative to hand counts, the vote counts that are counted on these machines in competitive contests are consistently redshifted, not randomly. There isn't, some redshift and some blue shift towards the Democrats. It's 96-97% redshifted. This doesn't happen by chance. The exit polls are just one baseline, and of course, the corporations and the media corporations fell all over themselves discrediting their own exit polls. But the exit polls in Germany, for instance, are always within 1%, within 0.5% of the results. Here, they can be off by 10%, 12%. So these are not anomalies relative to the experience of the last 4 or 5 election cycles, where we're seeing a consistent pattern of rightward distortion. I should say that in 2006 and 2008, it won't escape notice that the Democrats won. And Obama won in 2008. The Democrats won about 58 House seats and, a net gain in 2006. And that caused a lot of people to look at us and say, oh, you must be blowing smoke. You must be imagining something. Because why would the right wing rig to lose? And the right wing did not rig to lose. They rigged to win. But what happened in both those elections were there were extraordinarily 11th hour developments, things that happened at the end of September and during October, both times. In 2006, it was the Foley scandal, the Haggard scandal, the Swaggart scandal. The Republicans went into absolute catastrophic free fall in the last 3 weeks before the election. And we have measures of that, actual polling measures of that. 2008. Around the same time, Lehman Brothers collapsed, the market crashed, McCain was standing like a deer in the headlights, and he went into free fall. So close contests became blowouts. And what happened is that swamped a very substantial rig. And that rig, nonetheless, it succeeded in reducing the Democratic victories in both 2006 and 2008. And I say this as a forensic analyst, not as a partisan. I'm not carrying water for the Democrats. We're looking at the facts. We're looking at the numbers. And that, what happened in 2006 and 2008 seemed to sound in all clear because the Democrats won. But when you look at it, what was actually going on was there was a rig in place. That rig at that time was deployed largely on memory cards that were pre-programmed and deployed into these machines. There wasn't time subsequent to these 11th hour shifts in the political dynamics. There wasn't time to recalibrate that rig, redeploy. So the rigs failed to achieve the purpose of maintaining control. And yet at the same time, the impression that was given was that these elections must have been clean, and our evidence is that they were not. Bringing it more up to date, what's happening currently is that technology enabling manipulation of elections more neatly and more tidily has developed and proliferated so that it is now common to take votes out of a state, out of county tabulators, off-site, across state lines, and process them. I give you inverted quotes around the word process. Why votes need to be processed? Who knows? They go through this IP network to out-of-state servers run by unidentified corporations, and then are returned back to the county tabulators, and in some cases back to the precinct tabulators, depending on how the system is networked. That was happening in 2004, to our knowledge, in one place, in Ohio. And Ohio's votes wound up in Chattanooga, Tennessee, with an outfit called Smart Tech, run by Mike Connell, who was later, he died in a plane crash, a very suspicious plane crash, just before he was about to testify in a case in Ohio involving Karl Rove. He's out of the way. But in 2004 in Ohio, those votes were processed. And we know that in Ohio there was glaring signs of systemic computerized election fraud. That process that started in that one place has now proliferated around the country. And what this does is it makes it possible to manipulate elections with real-time targeting and calibration, so that you can figure out on election night, after all the political developments have happened, after all the electoral dynamics have shifted, you can figure out how many votes you need to win an election, to place that election beyond the recount threshold if necessary, and you can do it in a very tidy way with a very small footprint. You don't over-calibrate, you don't under-calibrate. The development of those technologies, that would be one of the things I'd be asking the media to do. Look on election night at the networks, at the IP networks, and where these votes are going, and ask why they're going there. Ask who they're going to. Ask who is doing that processing. That would be real investigative journalism. And instead, what we get is we get a bunch of pundits talking about why we're seeing another right-wing sweep, taking everything absolutely at face value, and that is just not adequate reportage. It's not adequate investigation. It's a travesty, given the evidence that has already been adduced and developed and the analysis that's been done, that's been shown to the media, and that they have apparently decided to ignore.
Jonathan Simon, what would be the justification for, if it was the people of Ohio or any other state, for their votes being transmitted out of state and then coming back? It seems like it would be, it's not... lacks sovereignty for the people of Ohio. What are the justifications that are offered, or do they even have to, does the press maybe not asking these questions so they don't have to offer justifications? I don't know.
I think you just answered your own question. I mean, the press are not asking these questions. No justifications have been asked for. I can't imagine any justifications. I mean, in this day and age, obviously, you know, you call up for, I don't know, help with your microwave and you're connected to somebody in Pakistan or Bangladesh or whatever. So, you know, the world is globally networked, and it could always be said, well, this is just where the servers happen to be. Land is cheaper there or something. That really, really begs the question. And it's not only that they're being, you know, processed off-site, but it's who's doing the processing and who these corporations are and what their agenda, certainly looks like it is. This is not any longer a democratic system when you have votes being counted, you know, all around the country, in secret, concealed. There's no transparency. It's not public. And yet it's the nature of this country, because after all, we are the beacon of democracy, to just assume that we're doing everything right, to take the computers as a fait accompli, as an absolute necessity, to look at any call for a return to visible, public, transparent hand and human counting as being Luddite or being absurd. It's not absurd in Germany now. It's not absurd in the Netherlands. It's not absurd in Ireland. It's not absurd in Australia. It's not absurd in Canada. But it would be absurd in the United States. We just have all this inertia. And that inertia, and this was part of my open letter, is being abetted by a media that just goes along for the ride, and seems invested in this process that we have, just like it's turned in many ways politics into a sport, into an entertainment. Everything is turned into an entertainment. So election night is all about getting the votes fast and having a lot of colorful pie charts and making an entertainment. Well, that's all well and good. I mean, but there are other ways to be entertained. This is too damn important to turn it into entertainment. This is the bedrock protocol of our democracy, the counting of our votes every 2 years. It's now, for what it's worth, infested the polls. It's infested the exit polls because the pollsters would go out of business if they didn't keep pace with the elections. If they keep predicting elections wrong, this is not good for their careers. So they figured out a way. It's called the likely voter cutoff model in terms of all the tracking polls that are done. They all now use the likely voter cutoff model, which to be very just to summarize, basically disproportionately excludes members of the would-be Democratic constituency from the sample. It excludes them as respondents to the poll, skews the poll to the right, and then some of those respondents will go on to vote. They may not be the most likely voters. They may not have a 90% likelihood of voting, but they might have a 50% likelihood of voting. They're going to the machines. They're casting a vote. They're not being recorded in the sample. It's disproportionately Democrats who are being the young, students, people who are transient and move around, renters, urban dwellers. Those are the ones who are being excluded. It skews the sample to the right. We estimate about 5 to 10% to the right, way to the right. If those polls, if that methodological abomination known as the likely voter cutoff model is getting elections right, it is all but proof positive that the elections are being counted wrong, because there's no way that this model can be getting elections right. But it would have to be a very brave and a very suicidal pollster who used a correct methodology and came out when his polls or her polls were off, always in the same direction by 5 or 10% in these competitive races. Because remember, competitive races are the ones that are targeted for manipulation. They're the ones also that are polled. Non-competitive races are not polled. You know, and they're not manipulated and they're not polled. But the competitive races are both. And if he just came out over and over again wrong in the same direction, and then he said, well, wait a minute, you know, the election counts are wrong and all my polling colleagues are wrong, I'm right because I'm using the right methodology, I don't think that would fly. And so they all have to go along. Pollsters stay in business not by having a certificate of methodological purity hanging on their wall, but by getting elections right. And when elections are being skewed and manipulated and rigged, the pollsters have to find a way to match that. And that's exactly what you would expect them to do. Without any malice on their part, that's exactly what they've done. So we're seeing our baselines disappear. We're seeing polls that set up expectations that are way to the right of the reality of the American political scene. And then we're seeing the elections confirm those expectations but seem consistent and kosher because they match the polls. You know, when people look out in America, and I think this is true for lots and lots of people, and they scratch, but certainly progressives, but even, you know, moderates, independents, probably even some Republicans, and they look out at the American political scene and they scratch their head and they say, this just doesn't look right. People are voting against their interest. It doesn't make any sense. What we're seeing, this portrait looks like a fake, and that's because it is a fake. The electoral portrait is almost surely a manipulated portrait, a fake, that is happening in the darkness of cyberspace, fulfilling the agenda of probably what is a very, very, very small cadre of individuals, entities who want to see America move in a certain direction and don't give a damn if that's a vision is shared by the majority of the public.
Lastly, Jonathan Simon, towards the end of your open letter, you write, we are here at this reform conference, you have reform in quotes, we are here at this reform conference against our better judgment, trying perhaps one last time to open eyes to a reality none of us wishes to contemplate.
Yes, I mean, we've been banging our heads against the wall, in my case, since 2002. A lot of my colleagues have given up. I mean, the election integrity movement, I would say, is actually shrinking. Every now and then something like Wisconsin comes along and there's sort of an episodic spike in interest, but the sustained interest, and that's what it would take, sustained attention, sustained interest, that has even faded from this movement and from among my colleagues. And so, you know, when I say against our better judgment, it's because we've been here before, we've tried. You know, we're aware of the difficulty. When I wrote that open letter, I felt like I was getting on a bicycle and setting off into an 80-mile-an-hour wind. You know, we know the hostile reception that we get for this. We know that it's verboten. We know that it just will not, generally be even acknowledged or touched by not only the mainstream media, but a good part of the progressive media as well. And, in our minds, I was at the Left Forum about a month ago down in New York City. We're here. I mean, if we're not speaking to the plenary, if we're not speaking to the full assembly, there's something wrong with the priorities, because this, especially for progressive gatherings, and the Media Reform Conference I think would qualify as a fairly progressive gathering, the progressive agenda is DOA, is absolutely DOA, as long as elections are not brought back and the transparency and honesty of elections is not restored, forget about the progressive agenda. And I mean, I think you can see that. Where is the progressive agenda today? I mean, the progressive agenda is trying desperately to fight off the marauding, right wing, Scott Walker, and trying to salvage something out of the union busting, trying to salvage something out of Medicare and Social Security. I mean, that's not a progressive agenda. That's a rear guard desperation action. So that the people assembled here, you know, you would think would stop and look at it and say, well, what is wrong with this picture? Well, one of the things that's wrong with this picture is we're losing elections that we're not actually losing. And that is killing the progressive movement in America. It's killing American democracy. And it's taking America off in a direction that people would not accept. And yet they're unwilling to look at, if not the only cause, then one of the prime causes for why this is happening. And, you know, we're happy to address two people at a time, seven people at a time, whatever it takes. But this issue should be front and center. It should be part of the plenaries. It should be part of the main focus of attention, certainly on the progressive side, and really for anybody in this country who cares about democracy and who values the democracy into which we were born.
Thanks so much, Jonathan Simon.
Thank you for talking to me.